Thank you, Drew. Thank you for inviting me to talk today to this great group that's assembled here. And the work that I'm going to talk about today was done primarily in the 90s, but actually some of this is still living on, as in there are still people that are doing on-farm research based on some of the principles that we established at that time. Stuart Wiest is here in the audience, so we'll have backup as far as questions are concerned. Roger Vieseth was also instrumental in this program. Unfortunately, Roger left us a few years ago due to an unfortunate accident. But his legacy is living on based on some of the things that you're going to see here today and his tireless work that he contributed in conservation agriculture in the Pacific Northwest. His legacy will live on for a long time. That should be a lesson for all of us, actually, on the importance of our work. Well, on-farm research is a powerful tool for growers. It can be an experimental methodology that can be used by growers to evaluate, test, and adopt new technologies. So it's for growers, by growers, to enhance their crop management abilities. On-farm research in this context is not research-managed small plots on farms. That a lot of us have all, we go out to farms and put out our variety trials or something like that. That's not what we're talking about here. Oops, excuse me. On-farm research is not a single strip or a split field or field-to-field comparisons. We're defining it that way, even though Kathleen is telling us some interesting ways to approach that in the future. On-farm research in this context is a replicated randomized statistically designed comparisons following the principles that Kathleen talked about. It's site and grower-specific investigations of their agronomic practices, and it needs to be designed to account for variability that's out there, soils, topography, climatic conditions, and cropping systems that are in place. Now, there can be many benefits of on-farm technology, on-farm research. We also call it on-farm testing. Technologies are evaluated under grower conditions, and this produces then a high level of credibility, not only for the grower themselves, but for other growers that are familiar with it. So they like to see what's going on their neighbors' farms, and that there's a lot of cross-technology that comes from that association. It leads to local site-specific farming technologies because it's specific to their farming operation, increases the abilities of growers and ag industry to develop and adopt these new technologies. Our on-farm research was supported by researchers generally. It was regionally coordinated, and it's useful, then can be useful on a larger region. And we also published some of the results from this in extension media and even in the scientific literature. So the overall project goal was to develop farmer-driven on-farm research or on-farm testing to accelerate the adoption of management practices that control soil erosion, protect water quality, enhance profitability. Some of those goals there, the specific goals, come from where the funding that supported this on-farm research project originated. And I'll talk about that in just a minute. So this was supported by the regional STEEP project, and that's where the funding came from for us to do these projects. If you're not familiar with STEEP in the Pacific Northwest, it stands for Solutions to Economic and Environmental Problems. And it's a federal specific project for the area, and they were interested in transferring technology that was developed by researchers to the growers, and one of the mechanisms that we developed this on-farm research project was to do that. So it engaged farmers in research addressing their needs in those areas I just talked about, developed on-farm research methodology. We needed to have good on-farm trials that gave successful, useful results to the growers, and delivered these educational programs and those materials to get into the hands of the growers who wanted to do the on-farm research, and evaluate innovative practices that reduce soil erosion, improve water quality, enhance profitability. The overall project had several investigators, principal investigators from the tri-state area of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, Baird Miller at Washington State University, Roger Vieseth, myself, Russ Caro, who's now a department chair at OSU, Don Wysocki, who's still at Pendleton, and Stuart Wiest was our project coordinator that we hired into the project, and is now at Pendleton as an ARS. So we as researchers needed to engage the people who could do this. And so we incorporated, we worked with county extension persons, anywhere from 3 to 5 in each of the 3 states, farmers, conservation districts, ARS and Soil Conservation Service for federal people, agricultural services industries, and farmer organizations. In other words, anybody who's in agriculture out there, we wanted to get a hold of. So one thing we wanted to be able to do is tell farmers methodology. We wanted them to randomize and replicate treatments. We needed them to limit the number of treatments so these on-farm trials don't get so big that it overwhelms them, they can't complete them. We wanted to have a plot size that accommodates the farmer's equipment, just like Kathleen mentioned. And we didn't know what plot size to use. How long of the plot width was pretty much established by farmer's equipment, but how long the trials were in the field is still unknown, especially in the Pacific Northwest. There was some previous research in the Midwest that showed that long, narrow plots that encompassed a large amount of variability in the field actually produced very low coefficients of variation. But we have slopes anywhere from 0 to 50% in the Pacific Northwest, as you can see from the photographs I'm throwing up here. We have variable soil types, fertility, and topography that really creates huge amounts of variability in very short distances. So are long trials perhaps the best? Or if we truncate them and try to put them into a smaller area of variability, could we get better results that way? So we wanted to test this methodology and see what was happening. So we conducted a series of uniformity trials. In 1991, we did 6 trials they were in areas that produced yields in 34 to 93 bushels per acre, so it represented many of the production areas in the region. And our design in this case, we did 250-foot segments down through a field to a length of 150 feet, and then did a 150-foot strip to compare to. And we did that in basically 4 replications across the field. This allowed us to combine 2 of these 250-foot, and we could look at the variation in 500-foot, or likewise at 750, and so on out to 1,500-foot of distance. Now, statisticians are very beneficial, because we talked to statisticians about this design, and they said, well, we can optimize this design and get more information out of this. So in 1992, we did 8 trials, and we had 2 250-foot plots, and then a 500-foot segment and a 500-foot segment. So the combinations there could do all the permutations in 250-foot increments from 250 feet on out to 1,500 feet. And we did those 8 times throughout the field to look at the variability that is there. What came out of this then was we could plot variance versus plot length. And in this case, it's a regression of log variance versus log length. And this comes right out of an article, Journal Production Agriculture, showing that in 1991, this was the most variable field. This was the next most variable field, and so on. Some of these were actually pretty good going across the bottom here as far as variance was concerned. I would suspect there was a lot of topographical differences on some of these high variance locations. And in 2002, we had 8 locations, also a couple of really high ones here, and the rest of them really didn't have the amount of variability involved. When we asked the statistician to look at this, he decided to lump together these 2 high variable sites in 1991 and 1992 to create a high variance pool of data. And then the other 10 sites from each year that were lower variance went into a low variance scenario. So we were able to plot this variance that we had in this experiment. And in this case, it's a LSD value in bushels per acre against plot length. And for high variance and low variance fields at different alpha levels. In this case, alpha 0.05, the high variance would go to almost 14, down to about 7 as far as the as we increase length from 250 feet up to 1,500 feet of our plot length. And similar responses in the low variance sites, actually a little less than half here, going from 250 to 150 feet, 1,500 feet. Another way to look at this is to fix the alpha level at 0.05 bushels per acre versus plot length, and look at the different what happens with replication. This allows us a tool to show the farmers why we need replication, why two replications don't work. It's not going to give us very much information, but if we go to three replications or even four replications and so on, we can have a more powerful test out there and make better comparisons and find the differences that they'd like to find in the field. So when we talk to farmers about on-farm research methodology, we showed we'd like them to have two replications or more, limit the treatment numbers to a reasonable number, so it isn't too many treatments to evaluate in the field, of 2 to 5. The basic plot size, plot width would be combine width or greater, and the plot lengths then, we recommended a minimum of a 500 foot length, and ideally 1,000 to 1,500 feet to lower that variability that we have encounter as we go across our very variable topography. So we have a little bit of information about experimental design. We conducted on-farm research workshops with growers. We produced some educational materials. And some of these educational materials, there's a grower's guide, data collection, and actually Oregon developed a simple statistics programs for growers to use. A lot of this information is available on this website from the STEEP project. Just click on on-farm testing when you get to the main page on this website. We did field tours of on-farm studies to do the farmer-to-farmer transfer of information. And we summarized this in some just some summary publications from 1992, and I also did some of that beyond the first 4 years out in Idaho on my own. And of course, we did one-on-one interactions with farmers. In the first 2 years of our on-farm trials, we did 53 trials spread across the three states. And we had 22 different topics that growers came up with to evaluate in these trials. So it's really a diverse look at their farming practices that they wanted to look at. Some of the topics were subsoiling with a pitting, soil pitting apparatus on a chisel, conservation tillage drill comparisons. That was a very important topic back then. field application of biosolids, canola establishment fertility, wheat barley variety comparisons, deep furrow drills with notched packer wheels, really a diverse look at some of the farming practices out there. So we did 53 trials in the first 2 years, 34, 52, and 50 trials in the next 3 years. And even though there's just 50 trials summarized, within one of those trials, there were 52 cooperators that did barley variety trials. So there's many more participants than just the 50 trials that are listed here. In Idaho, the ones I summarized then also multiple cooperators in some of these trials. I think when we added it up, it came to somewhere near 400 trials that were conducted by farmers on farmers' ground in the Pacific Northwest across the period of the studies that we're talking about here. And I'd like to show you one or two of those studies a little bit, just to give you a feel for what went on in the field. In this case, this was a study by a couple of farmers down near Craigmont, Idaho, south of Moscow, Idaho. If you're familiar in the area, it's called the Camas Prairie. And they're evaluating the effect of fall tillage following a spring wheat crop on spring pea yields, or residue retention, and then a subsequent wheat yield in the third year. Basically from the study. They started it in the first year managing the residue from the spring wheat. They went to peas and then on to, in a three-year rotation that's common in the area, on to winter wheat. So they wanted to look at some of these possible tillage systems that are out there. This minimum till system right here is a fall disc treatment followed by direct seeding in the spring, so no further soil disturbance. This is a spring burn followed by direct seeding. a plow, a fall plow, followed by spring cultivation, then seeding. And this was a direct seed, putting peas directly into the spring wheat stubble that's out there. So this was all farmer designed out here in the field. And we didn't follow complete randomization though, because in order to do this burn treatment, it had to be placed between the two tillage treatments so it wouldn't get over here into the direct seed treatment. So we had to force things as far as our randomization was concerned a little bit in this experiment, although it is one of 16 possible randomizations, if you want to look at it that way. So all things can be fair in statistics if you want to account for what's there. There were four replications in this experiment, times the four treatments, 16 plots. They were equipment width wide and 1,200 feet long. So they're quite large plots, roughly an acre in size, each plot. So it occupies a large area in a field. And in this case, this is the plow cultivate treatment. And doing the spring cultivation, he has a rather wide implement here that he's cultivating with. And it's actually a wider strip than the no-till strip is here, because we only need a combine width to go through the no-till strip. So we could actually save space in this trial by having different widths of the strips that go through here. But each strip, when they were harvested, had one combine swath through the middle of it to get the weights off of the end results. Now, the researchers come in here and we help doing some other things. We helped with taking crop residue measurements. This was very important, especially for conservation compliance at the time. And evaluating these four treatments, just as you would suspect, the more disturbance, the less residue that there is there. So the direct seed had the most residue all the way through after pea planting, after pea harvest, and even over into after winter wheat seeding. It carried through the most residue. The fall disc was next, spring burn, and then when you go out there and plow, cultivate, you destroy all your residue. And you don't have enough for conservation compliance, by the way. And we got quite good LSDs for residue measurements. These LSD values are quite acceptable. Then on to, we also collected plant stands with the growers, did the seed yields. One thing that we found was very important in these trials is to help the farmers with yield assessments if they need it. We oftentimes provided either weigh wagons, or in this case, you can see weigh pads to put their single axle trucks up onto. And we'd also take samples as the grain's coming in here with a high-tech device called a bucket on a stick and things like that. One thing the grower wanted to know was, do we establish peas well in all these systems? Yes, we did. Were the yields the same? No, they weren't. And in this case, the direct seed pea yields were the highest. And interestingly enough, fairly soon after this study was conducted by the riggers, they switched all of their acres over direct seeding. So tested methodology and then applied it on their whole farmery operation. I think that's quite a success story. One other example here is looking at two tillage operations. In this case, it was plowing on a side slope in this area right here. And it turned out to be 900 feet across this side slope here. So this whole area was plowed and then disked, and compared what was happening there to a burn minimum till treatment. So it burned that area and then direct seeded it. We also did, and this was to evaluate things like erosion. You have to have a large area on a whole slope area in order to evaluate erosion. You can probably see some of the erosion rills coming down this hill here in this check or tillage treatment in this case. So they were able, and there were other people that came in and then quantified the erosion off of this area compared with the other treatment. And harvesting that across the side slope here was very successful. So we conducted on-farm tours to get this technology in other people's hands. And here's Stuart, a very much younger Stuart, about 15 years ago, standing out in the field after he's put in some stakes to help establish these plots. The other good thing about on-farm research is it's a lot easier now than it used to be. We have GPS. We don't have to run tapes all around the field out here. Farmers have yield monitors on their combines. So we might not have to drag weigh pads and weigh wagons out to the field so much, much easier than many of the things we did. We interacted a lot with the farmers on their research. Depending on the farmer, we might have been involved with conceptualizing an investigation, such as experimental design, treatment selection, replication, randomization, location of where to put the trials out, plot sizes. We might help them with field layout. We certainly help them with data collection. And analysis of the results was very important for the growers to be able to turn the data over in many cases, and we could help them with statistical analysis. And then utilization of the results, we did that ourselves, publishing the results here and some of our other extension publications. So it was a success for everyone. We created methodology that helped with important concepts of randomization, replication, and plot design. We had educational meetings and got on-farm trials running in the fields because of this educational effort. The researchers, we also supplied technical and logistical support for a large number of growers, and we did many successful on-farm trials, like I mentioned before. So it was a success for the farmers, it was a success for the researchers, and it facilitated technology transfer to the STEEP project. And this was our logo right here. On-farm testing was the key to successful technology transfer in the Pacific Northwest. And with that, I'd be glad to entertain any questions. Yes.
You kept saying was. It's not going on anymore? Did it run its course?
The course of the funding from the STEEP project was only a defined period. So that was our on-farm research project. I still help farmers with on-farm trials sometimes, occasionally.
And carrying on from that, we do a lot in my jurisdiction in Ontario. But the farmers are keen to have it done. But they want somebody organizing it. They don't want to be responsible for the management of that themselves. Are your guys different? Are they up there doing this themselves and you're doing a little bit, or are you managing it on their behalf?
It's a whole range of possibilities, depending on who we're working with. There are some of our growers are sophisticated enough that they are doing on-farm trials on their own. They can do statistics on their own. They know how to... From some of the information from this project, they know how to design them, put them out in the field. They can do it on their own. We like to get involved because it helps us tap into that technology that they're evaluating out there, so that we can actually perhaps disseminate that to more than one grower too. But everything from there clear down to, yeah, if somebody comes with us with an idea and we have to basically go through the steps with them and get them out in the field. So it could be the whole range of possibilities there. But there are those certain critical periods that are very helpful to growers. Oftentimes with design, and probably the most important one during this project especially was to give that support for establishing yields out there. To help them with that. They're crunched for time then. They're making money harvesting. They're not making any money not harvesting. And to minimize that, the time that they have to spend harvesting these strips from the experiments are very critical. Yes?
Did this start out farmer-driven? Or like Practical Farmers of Iowa, where they started this, and then the university has kind of now caught up and jumped on the bandwagon? Or was this university-driven from the beginning?
This project itself was, well, instigated. I won't say driven. I will say it's instigated more than anything by the researchers in the area. And that came from a direct directive in the STEEP project for getting technology transferred to growers. And the researchers conceptualized an on-farm research project to enable us to get that technology that was being developed through research into the hands of farmers. And it kind of evolved beyond that, though, because the farmers were developing their own technology, their own information that they want to have on their own operations. And this project then supported those farmers as well. And I believe it was very successful and stimulated a lot of improved practices by growers because of the results of the projects that were done here. I hope that answers your question adequately. There's really no formula for doing this, I guess, is the bottom line too. It could have come from the growers. Grower group could have gotten together and said, we want to do some testing of our practices on our own. And then perhaps it comes up through the county extension faculty up to the universities or something like that, and somebody says, oh, we've got lots of personnel sitting around doing nothing. We'll send them out to help you. That was sarcastic, by the way.
Have their own push for us in Wisconsin, the grazing population.
Yeah.
Basically, the university didn't support them. They barely do now. I mean, it's just barely getting going, but they've been doing their own research for years and years. So I was just curious if it was a similar situation.
I think we do have an example after our break session of it's driven by growers, an example from Nebraska on that.
Yes.
Just a question for both yourself and Kathleen. In terms of replication and treatment numbers, again, in our jurisdiction, we don't have these monster fields to work with, and so we have to be cautious on the number of treatments. And we're finding CVs with a total of 6 degrees of freedom, you know, well below 10%. There was a good paper given yesterday showing, you know, on-farm scale versus a small plot, with the on-farm often showing more precision in comments.
Yes, exactly that. When we were doing the methodology development, I didn't show some of the other work that we did. We did some small plot harvest right next to the large plot methodology variability assessment in the field. And we invariably got lower CVs, lower variability in the large plots than we did in the small plots. And that was true of other instances in the field where we were actually, if we have sister experiments located in an area of small plots and large plots, that invariably the large plots will give us lower coefficients of variability and lower LSDs than a similar treatment with small plots.
But can we get some consensus in the room about what is required in terms of number of replicates, and is it influenced by the number of treatments that are part of that design?
I could give you my estimate. By having the long plots that go over a long distance, you're really making a lot of comparisons that integrate the variability across the landscape. And that then gives that, it's almost a form of replication over distance, and integrates the variability that you might encounter across there to give a valid comparison then.
Well, I would just add to that in terms of, I don't know the specific question being asked, but really the answer from my perspective is it always depends. It always depends on what actually you are measuring. If what you are measuring doesn't have a wide breadth of variability along with that, if it's very highly consistent, tight precision, you know, that affects what you see in the percent CV. So, you know, to do a broad stroke comparison of, oh, what I see in the large plot versus a small plot, there's a lot of factors that go into that. So, I mean, if that's the response you're seeing, that is the data. The data is the data. So, move forward.
One more question.
Of course, the big trade-off of large plots and small plots is the number of treatments that can be evaluated. In small plots, you can do dozens of treatments, no problem at all. With these large plots, we really like to limit the number of treatments in order to be able to, you know, fit them into a field. So.
One last question.
I assume over that long period of time that you've been doing on-farm research, farms have been getting larger.
The farms are, but the fields aren't.
The farms are. Do you see any more reluctance of farmers sharing their results with each other?
Not in our region particularly. I wouldn't paint that brush stroke, I don't think. So.